Today's episode of The Overwhelmed Brain is brought to you by Handy. To get your first three-hour cleaning for $39 when you sign up for a plan, visit handy.com/brain. And make sure to use the promo code BRAIN during checkout. Recurring charge terms and conditions apply. Visit handy.com to learn more. Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello and welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. My name is Paul Coliani and this is the show where I help you tackle the challenges that life and people throw at you. I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about on this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. Okay, I made it almost through that. And I'm glad we're here today. I'm glad you're here today. Thank you for joining me. And I would like to talk about family drama. I received an email a while back that talks about family drama and how it affects you. I'm sure that you've experienced some sort of family drama along the way. My ears are ringing now as you are screaming at your podcast player that, yes, of course, Paul, I've experienced family drama. That's why I listen. Well, family drama comes in all shapes and sizes and forms, and I've experienced my share, and I'm sure you have as well. And what do we do with it? How do we respond to it? And I think the number one question, are we obligated to get involved with it? I remember getting an email. Was it a comment? It might have been a comment on my blog. Yeah, it was. It was about, I wrote something about family and how your family can be your choice. You can choose who you spend time with. You can choose to spend time with your mom or your dad or your sister or your brother or any of your relatives or anyone that you grew up with, step parents, stepsisters and brothers. You can choose who to spend time with most of the time. Sometimes you have obligations, sometimes you have to take care of things, but most of the time you can choose who to spend time with because there's a certain point where you get old enough and you move out of the house and, you know, most of us move out of the house and get our own places and get our own relationships and develop new families, and we can choose to revisit our old family members if we want, and hopefully you have a lot of healthy, generally compassionate family members. But sometimes you don't have those. Sometimes you have one or two or more people that you don't want to spend time with. And so I remember I wrote this article and I said, you know, family is a choice. And he said he was really angry. He was like, I can't believe you would write this article. This is awful. Family is not a choice. Family is blood and family is forever. Those weren't his exact words, but they were pretty close. And he said, no matter what, I would always be there for my family. And I replied, you know, I think that's commendable. I think that's noble. I think that's wonderful. And if that works for you and your family is there for you in the same way, then you have something very special. You have something that is very unique. And you clearly have not experienced some of the stuff that me and so many other millions or billions of people have experienced in life, which is a family member or members that bring so much drama, so much chaos, so much heartache, so much pain that you can't be near them anymore. They bring this toxicity with them and create this environment which you can't survive in. Or if you can survive, it's at extreme detriment to yourself. And so I think in the article, and of course on my show, I talk about when you love someone, you support them. You support their happiness. You support their path. You do whatever you can so that they have a better life. I mean, not that you're supporting them in that way. You don't have to. But you support their journey. You support their decisions, even if you disagree with them. you do what you can to support your friends and your family and your loved ones. And when you do that and they do the same thing back, you can have a very wonderful, cohesive, intimate relationship with people that can do that for you as you do unto them. You can have a good relationship, and that good relationship can be nurtured for years and years and years so that you do have that kind of attitude where I would do anything for that person. And blood is stronger than any bond. And that's what I feel. And that's how I'll always feel. And some people can have that. And some people can't. I can't have that with certain family members. I wouldn't say excluded, but I might have. I've excluded a couple family members here and there. Especially one. If you've been listening, my stepfather, I've excluded him. He has not shown up in a very healthy way in my life. And if you want more to that story, just listen to the last 5 years, because I talk about him a lot. But he is not in my life anymore, and I choose to not have him in my life. And you might say, well, he's not blood relative. Well, I did the same thing with my dad for about 10 years. I excluded him from my life, and then I slowly brought him back in after I went through my own healing and growth. After I went through my own personal development, after I learned about what I value, what I accept and won't accept for behavior in my life. This is the most important point when it comes to family, in my opinion, is that when you have family members that are showing up in some sort of detrimental or toxic way, that what you should do, I'm going to give you a should. I know it's not always good advice to listen to the shoulds, but I'm going to give you a should. What you should do when you have somebody that shows up in a toxic way and they are a detriment to you and you get drained every time you're around them, what you should do is get away from them for a while, take care of yourself, and learn what it is about yourself that bothers you so much about them. And what I mean by that is you point the finger at first and saying, that person is doing this to me. And I'm going to say, okay, yeah, it's not really that person doing that to you. It's your reaction to it. And we all know this, but I want you to say it. That person is doing this to me. Okay, what are they doing? Well, every time I talk about my marriage, she makes fun of my husband or wife. And I would go, okay, so when that person, so let's say your mom, when your mom makes fun of your spouse, what do you say back? And you might say, well, I don't say anything. That's just the way she is. And now we can start to pinpoint where the problem is. I'm not saying that you're a problem. I'm saying that how the situation unfolds from the point of how you feel will be what exacerbates, amplifies, or allows the problem to continue. How you respond will allow the problem to continue or not. Because if my mom started talking about my girlfriend in a way that was not healthy and not supportive of my decision to be with my girlfriend, I'd be like, hey, mom, you know, why are you saying this about her? That's not very nice. You know, what's on your mind? You know, I would approach it very casually and passively at first because maybe something's on her mind. Maybe my girlfriend did or said something that upset her. So I want to find out, what's on your mind, mom? Why are you saying this about her? But if it was a constant thing and she never liked my girlfriend, I would be a little bit more adamant. Like, you know, every time you say that, it upsets me. It upsets me because I'm your son and I would hope that you would want me to be happy. And having this girl in my life makes me happy. Why doesn't that make you happy that I'm happy? You see what I did there? I want her to address her own values and understand that she is violating her own values. I mean, I'm assuming she wants me to be happy. So I would imagine that's a value of hers. And I'm going to ask her, why are you violating your own? I won't say those words. Why are you violating your own values? But why wouldn't you want me to be happy? Why? And then she might say, well, of course I want you to be happy, but I just think she's bad for you. I think you can do better. Yes, but let's take it back to that same question, Mom. This woman makes me happy in every possible way. Does it make you happy that I'm happy? And really, I would paint her into a corner so that she had to answer the question. Now, it's not always I was going to say, it's not always this easy. It might be easier for me than some people listening, for sure, because I've worked on this stuff. I've worked on values. I've worked on boundaries. I've worked on expressing myself in a way that says, hey, you're crossing the line. Hey, that's not acceptable behavior. What you just said is disrespectful, and I'm going to address it right now. For example, on the phone with this person, and they start saying something, and you have an opportunity to respond, and you don't, is it really their fault? Is it really them amplifying or continuing the drama? Or is it you for not saying something in that moment and not emphasizing the line that they keep crossing is very clear cut to you? And if they cross it again, that's going to be a problem. And you have to think about it in these terms where, yes, this person keeps showing up as a toxic influence, as a toxic entity in your life, but am I honoring the line? Am I making it clear where the line is so that when they cross it, I can say, oh, crossing that line, and then they can back up and go, okay, which, you know, still wouldn't be the most fun because, using my example again about my mom, if my mom didn't like my girlfriend and she started saying something bad, but I reminded her of the line and she backed off and she didn't mention it again, you know, that's okay because people can have differences. I've had girlfriends in my life that my mom didn't like and I loved and I was super happy with, but my mom didn't like them. But she knew that she wasn't going to give me grief about it all the time. She wasn't going to say, you know, I don't like that girl. You should never bring her. I mean, she never gave me grief about it. On occasion, she would mention something. It would be a little uncomfortable, but she never crossed the line. And, you know, after we broke up, she had a free rein to say anything she wants, but she never crossed the line while I was seeing someone. So this example is not one that she crosses the line and I have to continually push her back. But when you have a relationship with, especially a family member, that does have a difference of opinion with you, and they do have a tendency to cross the line, but it's very infrequent, I think that's okay. I mean, there's a disagreement, there's a personality conflict, whatever. I think that's okay as long as they respect the line. But you have to make it clear what that line is. This is personal boundaries 101. What is your line? What is acceptable and not acceptable in your life? So that when family tries to cross the line, that you can be very clear and confident and secure in yourself because you know what that line is. You know what it represents. When family crosses that line and you feel confident in yourself what that line is because you've worked on yourself, you can express to them, take a step back. You're crossing the line. That's tough. I know it is. Some family, it's going to be very tough. When my stepfather showed up at my mom's house, I've told this story a million times. I'm sorry if you've heard it over and over again, but it was one of the most pivotal moments in my life. My stepfather and my mom had been divorced for a couple months, and then he shows up, and she doesn't want him in the house. But this is the first time that I had seen him in years, and he shows up, and I'm used to being that fearful little boy around him that just does whatever he asks. I'm used to being that. And here I am, a 40-plus-year-old guy answering the door, and he's standing right there, and I have a choice to make to let him in the house or not. And that fearful boy just kicked right in at first, and in my mind said, here he is. I better let him in because I don't want to cause trouble. I don't want to know what happens if I say no, and I've never defied him, so what do I do in this moment? But in that moment, I remembered all the work I did on myself, and I didn't want to F that up. Sorry to use that language, but I'm keeping it clean. I didn't want to mess that up. I didn't want to mess up all the work I've done on myself. I want you to remember this. I mean, you're listening to this show. You're probably listening to other shows or doing other personal growth work. You don't want to mess up the work you've done by allowing the toughest challenges, family, I know, but by allowing people to cross the lines that you're creating, crossing the boundaries that you're putting out there. Because as soon as you do, what does it feel like? It feels like you're going right back to where you were. Like all that work didn't matter. At least it does to me. All that work that I'd just done for years and years, didn't apply here was a big waste. I mean, that's what it would feel like. And that's what it did feel like when my stepfather was there, is that I felt like, here he is. I have this boundary that he's about to cross. I don't want him in the house. And my mom definitely doesn't want him in the house. So I had this extra layer of protectiveness that I had to pull out. I didn't have this naturally, this protective nature. I had to pull this out of somewhere and really step into myself and be confident in what I had done in my life to get to this place and face the biggest challenge that I'd ever had to face. Well, that's not the biggest, but the biggest boundary challenge that I've ever had to face. And in that moment, I had to make the decision to let him in or not. And if I didn't, what am I going to say? And what would happen if I said that? I'm going to say, get out of here, you son of a, you know, you can't be here. You know, should I say that? Or I didn't know what to say. So I just said to myself, I think this is a great question. You've probably heard me ask it before. If I had no fear of the consequences, what would I say? What would I say? And the first thing that came to my mind is, I'm sorry, you can't come in. It was just a simple, I'm sorry, you can't come in. That was my boundary. I didn't have to enforce it in an angry way. I just realized the boundary and asked myself, if I had no fear of the consequences, what would I say? I'm still a fairly kind person, so I'm not going to say, get out of here, you son of a, you know what? I'm going to say, I'm sorry, you can't come in. That's really all that needed to be said. He looked at me kind of quizzically, shrugged his shoulders and said, okay, turned around and walked away. That was shocking. It was amazing. It was shocking and amazing. And I didn't know what to do except back up slowly and close the door and hope he didn't turn around and, I don't know, smash a window. I didn't know what to expect. Here's a guy that I am at least a foot and a half taller than, and he's standing in front of me, and I'm afraid for my life. I'm afraid that he's going to punch me in the face. I had no idea because I had never defied him. We go through so much of our life worrying about how someone's going to respond or react because we've never defied them. We've never honored ourselves with them. We've never told them what we wanted. We've only done what they've wanted or what we believed they wanted. And so we limit ourselves in who we are and we can't show up as authentic. And when we can't show up as authentic because we're showing up as the person we believe we need to be for someone else, then we feel unhappy. Then we feel unfulfilled. Then we feel our life is not as satisfying as it could be. Because we're setting ourselves up, because we're so afraid of the consequences of doing what we know is right for us, but what if? Or instead of a what if, we know this will happen. I knew that day my stepfather was going to punch me in the face. I knew it, but I decided to take the punch anyway. He didn't. I'm so grateful for that, but I had had enough of people crossing my boundaries. Even the people that didn't know they were crossing my boundaries. I had just had enough in me of allowing people to do it. A lot of people don't know when they're crossing your boundaries because you never make them clear. They won't know. We just expect them to know. We expect them to look at us and say, oh, gee, I feel really bad. I must have did something to that person that they didn't like. I better not do that again. We expect them to figure it out a lot of the times. We expect someone to come up with the brilliant idea that they're doing something bad to us. We expect it, and it never happens because we never define it, and they're oblivious. This is what I've learned, is that my stepfather was oblivious that he was crossing any of my boundaries my whole life because I never told him what those boundaries were. And I've heard people write to me and people I've coached before they listened tell me, I've never heard about personal boundaries until you started talking about it. I think in general, people understand what a personal boundary is. Like, you're sitting at your desk and someone comes along and they put their head right over your shoulder and stare at what you're writing. And you're like, I'm feeling very personally violated here. You're kind of in my space. I think people think that's a personal boundary, but personal boundaries are so much deeper, so much more real in the sense that we define what we want in our lives, what's important to us. It's part of our value system, yes, but it's so much more than that. What creates strife? What creates tension in our life that we have to put up a boundary? And with family, sometimes you have to put up boundaries that tell them, hey, when you cross this line, it's no longer my fault for allowing your behavior. It's your fault for not honoring my wishes, for not honoring me. Before, I let you cross the line, and it was my fault. Now, I'm stopping you at the line, and it will be your fault if you cross it. Therefore, I'm letting you know. I'm giving you that option in a loving, healthy way. I'm letting you know the next time you do this, it'll be a problem. And what is that problem? The accountability steps in. If you cross this line, I'm going to be angry. I'm going to say, look, you're crossing the line. I'm hanging up now. Or I'm leaving now. Or, you know what? I'm going to be gone for a week and I'll see you when I get back. These little bits of accountability. They may say, well, too bad. I don't care. You're the one with the problem, not me. You know, hopefully you don't have people like that in your life. But if you do, then you know who you're dealing with and you realize that your boundaries aren't important to them. And then you have this realization that someone in your life really doesn't care about your boundaries. And when that's true, what do you do then? Look, I realize it's not always easy to enforce your boundaries. I realize, especially with family who think they know you so well because they've known you all your life, that's one of the biggest challenges is that we have these people in our lives that have known us all of our life and they think they know us, but they don't. I don't think anyone knows me as well as I know me now, but only because I've done the work. And this is where I think it's the healthiest place to be, is that when you separate yourself from toxic or bad or just any type of negative influence or anything that's unsupportive, when you separate yourself from that for a little bit and do the work, do the healing, do the growth, do the therapy, do the coaching, whatever it takes, listening to podcasts, reading books, or just being outside in nature, meditating, all of this stuff that connects you to you. When you do the work and you finally know thyself, and you finally know yourself well enough that you can return to any family situation, almost any. There are still some challenges that probably need addressing on different episodes, but almost any family situation in general where you have an opportunity to show these people who you are in almost a fearless way. And it's not a matter of showing up saying, I don't fear you. It's a matter of showing up saying, I have no fear being me. I want you to have that. There's a lot more to talk about on this subject. I'm going to read you an email when we come back, and we'll get into some other aspects of this. Be right back. So you may know that I've moved recently. My girlfriend and I moved out of a rental into a house. I moved down to Georgia a few years ago and moved in with her, and we've been deciding ever since what we're going to do. And we finally decided that, okay, let's buy a house. Because I wasn't even sure if I wanted to settle in Georgia, but I decided to spend some time down here and be with my girlfriend, of course. I mean, wherever she goes, I'm kind of attached at the hip now, which is great. And she'd been in that rental for about 8 years. And when I joined her, I'd lived there for about 3 years. And it was time to go. It was time to pack up and buy a house together and, you know, start the next phase of our life. And the moving took weeks. We kept clearing stuff out of the apartment. And when we finally got the place empty, we noticed how dirty it was. It was filthy. We can see everything that we can see, and we clean what we see, but what about all that stuff that we can't see? And so we had all this dust built up everywhere. There were stains that we didn't even know were there until we moved that thing. We have just a lot of dust and a lot of dirt and a lot of grime and a lot of buildup. And it's not like we live like slobs, but at the same time, this stuff just happens. You're in a place for a long time, and dust and grime and food that spills behind stuff just builds up. So one of the things that we weren't looking forward to was putting all this effort into cleaning the rental just to leave it in a nice condition for the landlord to do something with it. And so in our new house, we didn't really want to go back. We didn't want to go back to the rental and put any more time and energy into it because we'd been moving for so long. And then I had an idea that my girlfriend called brilliant. I said, let's get someone else to clean it. Let's schedule an appointment with Handy and do the job that we don't want to do. And that's exactly what I did. I created an account, I downloaded the app to my phone, and within minutes, I had someone scheduled to do the cleaning. We were both elated. We were both thrilled that we could do this so fast. We didn't have to do any background checks. That's already done for us through Handy. You go to handy.com and find out more about that. There was a rating system that told us what other people said about the pro coming over to clean the place. And we were able to just let it go. We were able to just say, okay, great. We don't have to clean it. I mean, we went over there to let her in and we had to finish some other stuff up. But there she was. She showed up right on time. It was great. I could actually watch her on this little GPS tracking system they have on their app. It tells me where she is. It tells me that she arrived. And then when she got there, she, I forget, texted me or called me. She said that she was there. And I went down to meet her and there she was. It was all perfect. It was all seamless. And the person who arrived was wonderful. And we even said, hey, we're going to clean this part because this is something that we did. And she said, no, let me do everything. I'll take care of this. And so we knew it was in good hands. And we left. We ate lunch. We came back and the place was spotless. It was such a good feeling to look and see that all of this was done for us. And I tell you what, you can get your first 3-hour cleaning for $39 when you sign up for their plan. Visit handy.com/brain and use the promo code brain during checkout. And what that'll do is that'll get you in their system and give you a way to get easy access to book home cleanings on your schedule right from the app or website. And the fact that I don't have to go back and forth with the phone and it's all done through the free app that you can download on your Android or your iPhone, it just made life simple. Handy makes life simple when you have stuff to do that you would rather have someone else do. And there's a lot of stuff in my life that I would rather have someone else do. And I'm glad this exists. So go to handy.com/brain. Use the promo code brain during checkout and get your first 3-hour cleaning for $39 when you sign up for the plan. Recurring charge terms and conditions apply. Visit handy.com to learn more. And their services are backed by the Handy Happiness Guarantee. Just a bunch of pros bringing home cleanings on your schedule right from the app or website. Handy.com/brain. Welcome back. I'm going to read you an email that I received, a portion of it actually, and it's about family drama. Of course, we're going to keep it in the realm of family drama because we all love family drama. Not really, but we all need to know about it. We all need to talk about it, and we all need to heal from it when it's been pretty painful and toxic throughout our lives. This person I'm going to call, how about Ariel? Ariel says, of course, I must start with how much I appreciate your work. It's been a real joy listening to you over the years. The first episode I listened to was when you mentioned an exercise of going back to a childhood memory and talking to your childhood self. That did so much for me, and I was hooked to your podcast after that. Yes, Ariel, thank you so much for your kind words, and I absolutely recommend that. If you've never heard an episode where I talked about visiting your child self, that inner child work, where you go back and visit a version of yourself that needed something that he or she didn't have back then, it can be powerful. It can be useful. Absolutely. It can build new resources inside of you that you didn't have back then that suddenly appear in your life today. It's like a magical time travel that if you choose to do it and you really work through it in the sense where you show up as your adult self today with more resources that that child didn't have then, and you just imagine you see your younger self in a state that they need you most, or they need something most. What is that something you can give them? I think that's a great exercise. I've talked about it in other episodes, but yes, certainly I'm glad to hear that worked for you, Ariel. Let me continue with your email here. Ariel says, I'm looking for some advice regarding family influence. In a nutshell, my immediate family is a group of serial warriors. not like samurai worries, but the actual worrying, like I'm worried about what might happen. They default to negativity, victimhood, and apathy, myself included. I've done so much personal work in the past 5 years and have come so far from that now. My issue is, it seems like their lives are becoming gradually worse and worse. While they bury themselves further and further, I can't help but feel the guilt, obligation, and duty to do something about it. The problem is, I know if I get too close, I'll get dragged into the quicksand as well. Yes, you probably will. Even if I did, I wouldn't know how to help them because I don't have their issues, and I know deep down I am not willing to 100% commit to helping them because I'm busy trying to help myself right now. I fear my sisters are on their way or are already having suicidal thoughts, my mother convincing herself that she failed at life and will die as a failure, and my father isolating himself into a monotonous world and wasting his last days in a miserable negativity. I think you will most likely describe them as toxic, and I could agree. However, I was raised with old school family values and can't uncondition myself from the guilt, and I don't know how to deal with it or them. Let me just make a comment before I read the rest of this. I don't know if I would describe people with these characteristics or personality quirks or traits or whatever you want to call it as toxic. I use the word toxic a lot, not to describe people in general, but to describe behavior and situations and sometimes relationships. But like, for example, if your sisters are really having suicidal thoughts, I definitely wouldn't consider that toxic. They may be having toxic thoughts. They may be exposed to toxic behavior from people, but they aren't necessarily toxic themselves. Now, they may be toxic to you because of the drama. So I'm not going to necessarily say that these people are toxic, because I like to look at toxic behavior and even toxic people. I've been known to say there are toxic people, yes. That these are the people I say you need to work out your differences and everything I said in the last segment. You need to state your boundaries very clearly, and you just need to be a little bit more self-compassionate and self-loving around them so that they don't bring you down. It's almost like you have to make up for the energy draw that they take from you. It's not always the case, and I'm just kind of speaking from the hip right now, but I don't want you to think that everyone with problems or dysfunctions is toxic. So I just don't want that to get out in the world, is that there are toxic people out there, there are toxic behaviors, but just because someone has stuff they're going through, they can be toxic to us because of our response to it, which means maybe we need some detox. So that'll help. But they could also be toxic to themselves because of their responses. So I don't know if that clears anything up, but that's kind of what I was thinking on the fly here. He goes on to say, in a situation with a toxic partner, I can totally get through that because I feel that a person is a choice. I cannot look at my family as a choice. I did not choose them. I don't want to disconnect from them, but I don't want to get sucked into the abyss either. I'm in my 30s, I'm single, I'm a people pleaser, but I'm working on that. That's good. And I've always taken the role of the family mediator, as I seem to have the most rational, non-dramatic logic of the family, if that's relevant. I also have the easier life out of the people I just described, so maybe I just think I'm less dramatic and more stress-proof. Anyway, I'm hoping you have some advice for me in dealing with this, as I greatly value your life experience and would appreciate a reply. Okay, Ariel, thank you for sharing that and for your admission that you're a people pleaser. I admit that I have been a people pleaser for a very long time, and it sneaks out every now and then, but now I use it as a tool. Now I use it as a resource when I need it. Now I know when to use it, because there are some people that might show up in a way that you need to turn on some people pleasing just to calm them down and get through things. Like you said, you're the mediator. You know, I was a middle child. I became somewhat of a mediator. I've definitely been accused of being more passive and balanced than my siblings, but I haven't gauged that. I haven't tested that. But I think that they do see me as the more balanced person. And I guess that comes from middle child syndrome or something. I don't know. But I have definitely grown to be a people pleaser when I was starting from very young because I watched my mom do it. And when you live under the abusive alcoholic, you either fight back and resist and cause more problems, or you submit and become more passive and people pleasing just to get through each and every night. And that's what my mom did. I mean, of course, option three is leave. And some people don't think they can do that. Some people feel very stuck and That's a whole nother issue on another episode, but this is what my mom and our family did. We stayed. And staying, we had to develop dysfunction in order to complement the dysfunction, in order to synchronize, in order to get our gears in alignment with his gears so that we could have some sort of functioning machine. And so that's what we did. My mom developed this. My older sisters developed personality traits. One of them was more passive. The other one was more rebellious. And then I came along and I just learned how to deal with it like my mom. And suddenly I have this dysfunction that I take with me until I learn about boundaries, until I learn that I'm actually worthy and important and I can actually honor myself and draw the line. And this is where it sounds like you are at, Ariel, as far as putting that line in the sand, saying, you know, you can't cross this. I mean, you didn't necessarily say that, but if you get sucked into the drama, that is certainly something that you can look in at yourself and realize at what point you are allowing that part of yourself to get sucked in. When I say that part of yourself, I mean, think of the last segment. When you think of all the work you've done on yourself, what part of that isn't being applied at that moment? So that's important. It's important to understand the work that I've done on myself. What part of that is not being applied and why am I not applying it now? Yeah, well, you know, the people pleaser kicks in. I don't want to upset the person. I don't want to make them think I'm a bad person. I want them to love me. I don't want to lose this person in my life. That's great and all, but who are you showing up as? Because do you want them to love and honor the real you or only the you that you pretend to be around them? But I'm not pretending. This is who I am. I've developed this personality. Is this who you really want to be? That's, you know, another good question. Is this who I really want to be? Is this how I want to show up in the world? Is this how I want to show up for them? So in the last segment, I talked about some very challenging things to do, or at least one thing is drawing that line, making your boundaries known. That's challenging. I'm not going to say that was easy at all. It was a risk. It was a leap of faith. It was scary as heck. It was scary. And doing that meant that I was about to take one for the team. Who's the team? Me. I was ready to take a punch for the team. I was ready to take a punch for my integrity, for my authenticity, for my dignity, for me. I was ready to sacrifice for me. Sounds a little strange when I say it that way, but that's what it felt like. This is all the work I've done on myself. I'm not going to let this person take it away. So I just want you to keep that in mind. I'm not saying it applies to what you're going through now. You've got some other stuff going on here. Like your family's a bunch of warriors, like you said. And let me just make some comments on some of the things that you said and see where we can go with this. Like a constant worrying. I mean, that usually stems from a situation that you need closure on. Like if I am constantly worrying about money, I need closure on that. I either need to sell something or get a job or something else so that I can stop worrying about money. Yeah, but I have all these hospital bills or I have this student loan or this or this or this. Okay, well, I really got to get clear then. I really got to get focused. I better listen to Dave Ramsey, one of my favorite guys. He's a financial radio show host. He helped me get out of debt a long time ago. I better listen to him. I better read about money. I better learn how to control my money, save money. I'm going to focus on money because I'm constantly worried about it. So that's one way to reach closure. It may not help. You may have to spend the next 10 years getting out of debt. But what can I do to start the process so that I get a little closer each day? You might be constantly worried about someone in the hospital. That would be terrible. If someone is in a hospital bed and you're not sure if they're going to live or die, and it could be weeks, you might be constantly worrying. You're going to get to the point where you either have no idea and you have to accept that this is the way it is. You know, that's something to constantly worry about. That hopefully is temporary. In most cases, it is temporary. You're not sure if someone's going to live or die, but you eventually find out. I think there are things in life that we can constantly worry about that you may not be able to get past. How about if your child gets abducted? I mean, that is something that if I had children and my child was abducted, I would be constantly worried about it until I was dead. I'll admit it now. I would be constantly worried about it. the worrying would decrease. And it does. I'm not saying that it's still not important, but the worrying can and should decrease because there's nothing you can do about it after a while. You realize the futility of worrying really takes you away from so many other things in life that maybe you need to be doing. Maybe you need to be doing for yourself. Maybe you need to work on yourself. And in the example I just used about the child, work with groups, work with law enforcement, work with so many other people. And you can't be in a constant worrying state where you can't do anything. It decreases a little so that you can get your function back. And that's an extreme example. I hope I didn't bring up any sensitive issues for anyone out there. Because believe me, if I had a superpower, my superpower would be to find missing children. That would be my superpower. Find them and bring them home, or at least find closure for parents and family out there. That would be my superpower. I want that superpower. I'm declaring it in the world right now. I want that superpower. But what about other stuff that we worry about? What about worrying about someone coming home and if they're going to be angry or not? I mean, stuff like that. Why do we have to worry about this stuff so much? Well, I know. I mean, I'm not saying I don't know why. I know why, because we're worried that if he or she has this attitude when we come home, our night's going to go well or it's not going to go well. And this is where we might have to draw some boundaries or make it clear that when you come home and yell at me or yell at the kids or whatever, it really ruins my night. It really makes me think twice about this relationship. This is something I would say. Maybe not those exact words, but that's the space I go in because I'm constantly worrying about it. So what do I need to close this? If I'm constantly worried about maybe someone's attitude, someone's response, then I'm going to make it clear the next time they respond that way that there's a problem with it. I'm having an issue with this response every time we do this. I'm having an issue with it. I'm not saying this is the solid answer that is going to fix everything. I'm saying that what closure can you reach with constant worry? And this isn't exactly Ariel's question, but I'm addressing worry in the sense that it's important to know that constant worry needs closure. So what can I do to close it? Now, how this does affect Ariel is that if someone is constantly complaining to you, Ariel, and they're so worried about something and they keep sharing with you how worried they are, and then what you can do is help them find closure if you want. But if somebody was constantly worried and complaining or venting or whatever to me about something, I would ask them, well, you know, first of all, what do you think the solution is? What do you think the solution to the problem is? They may say, there is no solution. There's nothing I can do. And, I might follow that up with, well, if there's nothing you can do, why do you always worry about it? I mean, you just have to accept that that's how it is. You know, we could talk about that some, but I would probably help them find closure. I mean, if they wanted it, if they were constantly worrying, constantly complaining to me, I might ask them, well, do you want to find closure to this? That's a good question. Do you want closure? If they say, well, there's nothing I can do, I would still ask, well, do you want closure? Do you want this over? Do you want to stop worrying about it? And hopefully they say, yes, I would love that. I would love to stop worrying about it. Then I would ask the question, well, what needs to happen so that you can stop worrying about it? And wait for their response. They may not have visited that question ever. They may just say, I just want it to stop. Well, what do you want to stop? I just want him to be kind when he comes home. Well, have you asked him to be kind when he comes home? Well, no, he should know. This is what I was talking about earlier. So you never stated that boundary. You just expect someone to know that you want it, right? And then you might have a different conversation. But my thoughts about someone who constantly worries is to present them with the challenge of the solution. Okay, so if you did state your boundaries and he did honor those boundaries and he didn't come home and be upset like that anymore, then you wouldn't have anything more to worry about, right? And this is really helping them explore the worry. I don't know if it's going to help you, Ariel. It sounds like the people in your life, the family, is sort of in this repetitive drama cycle that they feed off each other. There might be a lot of enabling going on, which brings up my next point of secondary gain. What do they have to gain from being negative, from worrying, from being the victim? How do the other members of the family, including yourself, show up in their lives that benefits them when they're being this way. This might be a little harder to find out, but usually people don't drag on the drama unless they're benefiting in some way. Even the person that says, oh, my life is so awful and this thing happens and this thing happens, and it could all be true. But they say it a lot and they're always repeating it and there's never closure. Oh, it's always this and it's always this. And their friend is like, oh, you poor thing. Oh, here, put your head on my shoulder. Oh, you poor thing. And every time the drama comes out, so does the love and affection and support. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I am saying there is a bit of enabling when you look at it in the context of secondary gain. What can they gain secondarily from what they're doing that is negative? And when you find out what that secondary gain is and you take it away, sometimes the drama stops. If your mom or your dad or your sister or your brother is complaining and you show up the same way and you're supportive and loving, which again is not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a problem. It can be, but right now I'm talking about how are they gaining from it? Because if what you're doing, how you show up or other family members are showing up is causing them to gain something positive from it, then they're going to continue doing it, most likely. They're going to continue being that same way, the way you don't like. So you really have to assess how you're showing up in someone's life when someone gets into that drama chatter, where life sucks this, life sucks that, this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem. And again, we try to offer solutions. We ask them what the solution is. What is the closure? How can you get closure from this? And if they never want to go there and they always have another excuse and another excuse, then they're probably a little addicted to the drama. And why are they addicted to the drama? Because they're getting positive reinforcement for being in the drama. It may not be you, Ariel. It could be just a number of factors, or it could be other family members. But we have to understand what someone's getting from it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing it. If someone was complaining about their life 3 or 4 times a day, I mean, different aspects of their life, and suddenly their hands caught on fire, I guarantee you they would stop complaining. They would find something else to complain about. Hopefully, their focus would be on their hands and why they spontaneously combust. But when they stop complaining, then they have to find something else to do with their time. What else am I going to do with my time? All I have is this. Like my mom, she spent a lot of years and still today is not as much though, still today complains about my stepfather, even though they're separated, because every now and then she still sees him, but most of the time she doesn't talk about him. But it took a long time for her to get out of that drama cycle, that drama chatter that kept returning when he was in her life. And I can see it separating from her now. The drama cycle isn't there anymore. Because when she was able to complain about him, I and other family members would show up in a very supportive, loving, kind, and affectionate way. And I'm not saying that she was so hooked on secondary gain, but she was definitely in a space of not honoring herself and drawing a line and just dealing with things as they came, because she wasn't able to honor herself and say, look, you're crossing the line. You need to get out of my house. You need to get out of my life. He was doing things that were definitely crossing her line, but she never spoke up. And even when she did, and she expressed her dislike for what he was doing in so many words, she never provided accountability. She never went that extra step. And, you know, she felt like she couldn't. She didn't feel safe. She didn't have the money. There was a lot of reasons, and I get it. I understand that. But we do have to look at the cause, because sometimes we ignore the red flags until they're a part of our lives and we don't see them as red flags anymore. I just talked about this on my other podcast called Love and Abuse. I don't know if it's in iTunes yet. I was going to mention it at the end of the show, but I do know that if you go to loveandabuse.com, the second episode, not the introductory one, but the second one, is all about how we ignore red flags until they become a part of our normal life and suddenly we don't see them as red flags anymore. And we've gotten so deep into the drama and so deep into the dysfunction that we're not sure how to get out. We lose a part of ourselves. So if you want to check that out, go to loveandabuse.com. I don't know if it's in iTunes yet or any other podcast player for that matter, but if it's in iTunes, it usually is in the other players as well. It was just submitted the other day. Yes, it's finally, it's finally recorded. It's finally out there, and I plan on updating it as much as possible. But you can check that out if you're interested in that. But the idea of noticing the red flags as soon as possible so that you don't get sucked into the drama or dysfunction, so that you understand the cause started a long time ago when you allowed a person to cross your boundaries. The cause started back then when you hoped the other person would change, but they didn't. And so we do have to look at these red flags in our life and make sure that we're not just letting them slip by and not speaking up for ourselves. I know it's not always easy. Like I said, I know, again, this is so difficult if you've never worked on personal boundaries, if you haven't worked on yourself, which is why I say, and for you, Ariel, you need to separate, work on yourself so that you're confident in yourself, so that when you show up in your family, you have no fear being you. I want you to have no fear being you. I want you to show up that way so that when something happens, that you are okay in you. You don't go into some sort of emotionally triggered state and now you become this defenseless little child that is so afraid to speak up and say what you need to say that you get sucked right back into that quicksand, like you said, because that's no fun. So there's a few more things I want to say about your message, Ariel, and then we'll close the show shortly here. I talked about worrying and closure, and I talked about secondary gain. This has to do with the meditation that I suggested on other episodes, where you wake up one morning and you're the last person on earth. If you woke up tomorrow and you were the only person left on earth, then thinking about the problems you've been dealing with, how are they now? Are they still a problem? Do they still affect you? And the reason I like this meditation is because we can probably pinpoint most of our problems on other people. But if no one's around and you're the only one left, what do you do with those problems? Where do they go? What happens in your life? Who do you show up as now? So the reason I'm suggesting this to you, Ariel, is a way to gauge if secondary gain is in play. Because if they are benefiting from other people being in their life in a way that gives them positive reinforcement for their behavior, then how would they behave if no one else was in their life? How would your mom or your dad or your sisters, how would any of them respond to the world if so-and-so wasn't there anymore? That doesn't give you a resolution. It just gives you an idea of how somebody shows up in a way that positively reinforces a negative thing. So it's a helpful analytical way to look at something like, how would my sister show up if I wasn't around anymore? Oh, she'd probably be more upset. Well, how about if your mom wasn't around or your dad wasn't around? How would they show up? And this is a great question to ask your family if you ever wanted to play the game. Is like, if you woke up tomorrow and everyone you knew disappeared and you were the only one here, what would your problems be then? Or how would you feel about the problems you've been dealing with? I'm not saying you have to be their therapist or coach or whatever. I'm just saying that if you wanted to have some sort of productive conversation, that might be something you can ask them. Because what it does is it puts them in that state of what it's like to live their life without that other person in it. And it might actually give them access to a resource that they didn't necessarily see before. And when I say resource, it might be some sort of thought or idea or concept or feeling that they haven't had access to because they believe that their life would never change. So that's a helpful meditation or question you can ask somebody. What would you do if that person wasn't in your life anymore? I just asked this of a coaching client the other day. I said, what if you woke up tomorrow and your husband said, I don't want to be here anymore. I want to get a divorce. I'm leaving. What would you say? I sometimes ask that of clients. What would you do or how would you feel if you woke up tomorrow and the person and that person left? What would you say or feel? How would you feel then? And their answer is very telling. Their answer tells me exactly how they would feel and maybe what direction they need to take for themselves. But they don't. They may not want to take that direction. They may want the other person to take the steps to change when they themselves might be the only person that can change what's going on. And when that's the case, sometimes you have to take bolder steps. Anyway, I have more to say on this. What I'm going to do is give you a few more bits of information, bits of my opinions and insights on this, Ariel. And when we come back, I'm going to say some thank yous, and then we'll end the show with my final words after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank Handy. Go to handy.com/brain and use the promo code BRAIN during checkout, and you'll get your first 3-hour cleaning for $39 when you sign up for a plan. Recurring charge, terms, and conditions apply. Visit handy.com to learn more. And I want to thank Dave for his generous donation. He said, thanks for the excellent piece you wrote on goals for people who like us who hate goal setting. And Dave from New Zealand actually donated to me for that. I wanted to thank you for that, Dave. And if you're interested in what Dave's talking about, there's an article I wrote, I don't know, a couple years ago called Goal Setting for People Who Hate Setting Goals or something like that. And you could just go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com and type in the words goal setting in the search field. And you'll find this article, and I am appreciative. Thank you, Dave. And it's an article that I wrote from personal experience because I do hate setting goals. I'm the kind of guy that if I set a goal of like, I don't know, I used to do this in martial arts. They said, set a goal for 100 push-ups. But if I never reach 100 push-ups, then I have constant negative reinforcement that I'm not reaching my goals. And I thought, this can't be how the world works. If you set goals and you never reach them, you're going to be disappointed over and over again. So I decided to create an article called Goal Setting for People Who Hate Setting Goals. And I talk about how I do it now. And sometimes I set goals. It's not like I don't do any goals for anything ever. But there is a method that I use that I prefer over like strict, pragmatic goal setting. And so thank you, Dave. I appreciate you. Thank you for your donation. And anyone who's donated through the donate button at theoverwhelmedbrain.com or through the patron membership site at patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com, I appreciate you patron members. You can go on there and get private episodes, all the workbooks and worksheets that I've created, and even the Overwhelmed Brain book in PDF format. And I do my best to continually create new episodes in there that dive a little deeper into certain topics and talk about other things that I don't talk about on the public airwaves here. You know, there are some more adult situations that come up sometimes that I like to talk about. So if you're interested in supporting the show, becoming a patron, go to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com and you can show your support that way. Not only do you give, but I give back in that program as well. So thank you, patron members. You're all making a difference. You're all making this show happen. And anyone that donates. And of course, if you use the Amazon button at theoverwhelmedbrain.com, thank you as well. That's another way to support the show. And we're on the final stretch for the Safe Empowerment System for Social Anxiety. It's the Social Anxiety Freedom and Ease audio system that will help you get through your social anxiety moments. If you experience social anxiety, head over to quietbegins.com. And there's a 7-minute audio over there that gives you a taste of what's to come. It's got a lot of variety to help you address and sometimes tackle anxiety from all these different angles. I'm getting a bunch of experts involved to actually create something that is very useful, very beneficial, and that actually works. I want this to work for you. So February 2019 is this month, and it's in the final stretch of being created, and we're almost there. So I will let you know when that is ready, but you can pre-order it now for 30% off if you're interested. Go to quietbegins.com and check it out. I also want to remind you of the Love and Abuse podcast. If you go to loveandabuse.com, you'll see a link up there that says the Love and Abuse podcast. There are 2 episodes out as of this recording. And also as of this recording, iTunes has not posted the podcast yet in their player. So I'm expecting that to happen any day now. It's been submitted, so as soon as it appears, I will probably come on this show and anyone subscribe to this show, and I will let you know that it is ready to subscribe to if you're interested in that. Again, that's going to be focused on emotional abuse, manipulation, deceptive language, communication, and not just in like romantic relationships, in any relationships. I think in my 2nd episode, I talked about a business relationship, like a sales relationship, where people use coercive or manipulative language. And I think it's going to be a huge, huge help for a lot of people that are in any type of situation where they think they're getting bamboozled or they think they're being emotionally manipulated or abused, any of those situations that you want to know what's happening. You can't tell what's happening. You just know it's happening. Something's happening because you feel bad or because you got conned or something. That's at loveandabuse.com. It is the official podcast of the Mean Workbook. So if you have the workbook, that's a bonus. You don't need the workbook to listen to it. But the workbook itself is how to assess if your relationship is emotionally abusive and at what level and what you can do about it and how you can heal from it. All kinds of things over at loveandabuse.com. And finally, I'd like to thank Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. All right, my last thoughts on Ariel's letter. I really haven't given him a solid answer yet, but I'm giving him bits and pieces regarding the different parts of the email that he sent, just to give him and anyone else listening some idea on how to deal with family drama or family members themselves. My last thought on that is if you really want to help family that just seems to be on a downward spiral and you feel like there's nothing you can do and you're just watching them fade away and you feel like this is it, this, you know, there's nothing more I can do, it just seems like they're doomed. They're doomed. What am I going to do? There's nothing I can do. I think the best thing you can do when it comes to that is to make it known that you're there if they need you. You're an ear, you're a shoulder to cry on. You can offer advice, but only if they ask, and you show up as the best version of yourself so that you act as a beacon and not an enabler. What I mean by that is a beacon shines. The beacon is the one to turn to when things go badly. It's the lighthouse in the night and you're lost at sea and all you see is that little bit of light way in the distance. That's probably what you're going to head toward. If you're the captain of this ship and you need to get to safety, you're going to look toward that light. You're going to see that beacon. You're going to know there's a land there. There's something there that's going to save you. And boy, when you can show up in someone's life, I mean, if you want to be in their life, I'm not saying you have to be in someone's life, but they're bringing you down and you can't be around them and it's just draining you, then that is the perfect time to go off and work on yourself. Be with yourself, heal yourself, ground yourself, connect with yourself. Do what you can to learn, heal, and grow so that you can return as this person who is sure of him or herself, so that when you are in this situation, that their dysfunction, their drama, their toxic behavior, whatever they have going on, stays on that side. Because you have a boundary. And if they cross that boundary, you lovingly say, hey, you know, you're crossing my boundary. Just step back a little bit and I'm here for you. Because you can do this. You can be loving and have boundaries. You can love someone with boundaries. You can say, I am absolutely here for you. What's going on in your life? And they can share it and they can maybe pour out the drama chatter. They can continue being what you might perceive as the victim. They can do all this stuff. And it's not going to bother you because you know who you are. You are fearless being yourself. And they're not really a threat to you. They just need someone to express to. They might need to express to you every day. And it's the same story every day. You may or may not want to hear it. But this is what I do. This is how I show up for, like, my mom. My mom still has complaints. She still has worries. She still has concerns. Even though she hasn't been married to the, quote, problem for a couple of years now. They've been divorced for a couple of years. He still shows up at family functions every now and then, and she has to deal with it. But when she has a complaint, when it's the same old complaint, I listen. And I don't say, Mom, you already told me this. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? I used to be that way. But when I showed up that way, boy, that didn't help at all. In fact, it closed her down. It caused her to not want to express herself to me. And the more I allowed that, and the more she was able to do that with me, the more free she was to be herself, the more free she felt to share with me, the more safe she felt, the more she looked to me as that lighthouse, as that beacon. Not patting myself on the back. I'm saying that when you show up for someone as that safe, non-judgmental person, they will have a tendency to look to you, not necessarily as their salvation, but just someone safe to be around, someone caring, someone compassionate. And when you are that person, then there could be that glimmer in their eye where they look at you and go, wow, how do you do it? And at that point, you can share what you do. You can share that I get away from certain people in my life and take time to myself. I work on myself. I work on healing. You know, I look at my old emotional wounds and find out what still triggers me. And I work on that stuff. and I figure it out, and I keep figuring it out, and I keep working on myself so that when I'm in more dramatic situations, like in our family, I know who I am. Because I can lose myself very easily around family, just like you can. But as long as I know who I am, then I know how to show up, because I've learned so well exactly who I am and who I want to be and who I want to continue being. Because I don't want to be the old person that becomes fearful and anxious and full of stress and anxiety when I'm around family. I want to go beyond that. So when I'm around certain people that make me feel that way, I don't feel that way, because I have a different response now, because I know who I want to be and I can love with boundaries. And if you like the way I show up, I'd be happy to do what I can to help you get there. So this is why that when you take time to yourself, when you take time to heal, when you take time to get to know who you are, what you like, what you don't like, what you love about yourself, what you hate about yourself, everything under the sun about you, you get to know you. That way, when you show up and you know what you want to keep about yourself, then you're able to be in almost any type of toxic or dysfunctional situation and make it known that this is something you can't take away from me. This is something I can't let you have. And you do so with an almost fearless conviction that you know what is right for you. This is what I say at the beginning of the show. When you are honoring yourself and you feel confident in yourself and you feel worthy in yourself, then you make decisions that are right for you. And this even works in family. You can be loving and compassionate and kind without losing you in anyone else's drama. You don't have to lose yourself. This is why it's important to work on yourself, so that I'm not saying that you have to be someone else's beacon. But what happens is you work on yourself, that you show up so confident in yourself and you carry this surety of self with you that people can look at you and go, wow, I really like this vibe that you have. I really appreciate that you can honor yourself and you're very aware of your own beliefs and values and boundaries and you're willing to stand up for those boundaries. I really appreciate that. I want some of that. When you're around family and they see that about you, then maybe it'll rub off. Maybe they'll feel like they want that for themselves too. Again, I'm not saying you have to show up for these people. I really want you to do this for yourself. But that's the benefit of doing it, is that you affect other people in a positive way. And this is why it's so important that you don't get sucked into the drama, that you don't show up with any guilt or obligating feelings towards someone else, because then that adds to the dysfunctional cycle. That adds to what could be a toxic environment. And so in order to avoid that toxicity coming back to you, it's vital that you continue working on yourself so that when you show up in these situations, you are more of a beacon instead of an enabler, instead of someone that complements everyone else's dysfunction, because you all fit into the formula in some way that keeps the dysfunction alive. And when someone can look at you and say, I'd rather be more like you than to have to live in my own drama every day, you can share what you've done to get there, because they may need that. If you really want to stay involved with people that you know are in this drama cycle, that you know are in this dysfunction, then it's so vital that you work on yourself to the point where you are almost impenetrable. I'm not impenetrable. I'm not saying that that's easy either. I'm just saying that you get to the point where you know thyself well and you show up as thyself strongly. Because sometimes in a family dynamic, if you're not the role model, who is? Who is the role model in your family? It's not your job, but if everything's falling apart and you have a bunch of people, let's say in a room, do you look for the person with all the worry and the tension and the fear? Or do you look for the one that seems to have all of his or her stuff together? Do you look for the person that appears to be confident in themselves and feels like a leader to you to help everyone get through the dark times? This is why showing up for you is much more valuable than almost anything you can do, because you end up representing a stability that perhaps other people need. Again, you don't necessarily do it for everyone else. You don't have to be the leader. This is all based on what Ariel was saying, which was, I want to be part of this family. I don't want to lose this family. So what do? You might have to work on yourself to the point where you are this leader, this beacon, this light that people can look to and say, yes, I want more of that. I want more of that energy. I want to be like that, so that at least one person in the dynamic is an example of how life can be. Because sometimes we don't see it. Sometimes when there are people around us that don't have it any better and aren't any better off, we think that this is all life has to offer. And oh boy, isn't this fun, you know, sarcastically speaking. And that's tough. I don't want you to be in that position where you think that this is all there is. I want you to keep an open mind so that you can step into your power. When you are empowered, this helps you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. When you're creating the life you want, other people notice it. Other people might even want what you have. How did you do that? How did you create the life you want? How can you stand up to that person? How can you say yes when you mean yes and no when you mean no? And you might say, well, I'm happy to share it with you if you'd like to know. And maybe all the healing and personal growth that you've done on yourself spreads to them too. That could be just a little side benefit. As you heal and grow, maybe they will too. And maybe they wouldn't have gone in that direction had you not done it. Sometimes this can happen. So always continue taking steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.